The Still Parents podcast is proudly supported by Global's Make Some Noise. Click details in the description to find out more.
Right, let's do this. And straight away, I would like to welcome back to the show the amazing Jordan Black. How are you, Jordan, sir?
I'm very well. Thank you for having me back.
We should call Jordan the machine because I've seen things on Instagram this morning and I'm just like, it's like real life fucking Terminator.
What, his eyes glow red and he's got wires?
No, I'm on about like, you know, what's the bad one in Terminator? You know, the robot that just doesn't stop and just keeps going?
Yeah, the T-1000.
Is that what it is?
Yeah,
it's absolutely ridiculous.
Now, the reason why we've got you back, and we've recorded this ahead of time, but the day that this episode gets released is the day that your challenge has just finished. Right now, I imagine you're probably quite knackered.
Yeah.
You're doing this challenge for Fort Aurora.
Yes.
And do you just want to now make everyone else feel inadequate by by explaining what exactly this challenge is?
Yeah, of course. I've kind of toyed with the idea for a couple of years now, but I'd never been in the mental or physical shape to go for it. But essentially, in the short time that Aurora was here, she made a journey. The journey started at Leicester Royal Infirmary, where she was born. Mm-hmm. As mentioned in the first episode, we were then transferred to Queen's Medical in Nottingham. From there, we then went to Birmingham Children's Hospital before we took her home to have her final days. The total duration of that journey is 108 miles. Well, to be fair, I've added a little bit on because we're finishing at her memorial tree, which is a place that we go to celebrate birthdays and be together with family.
So when you say you've added a little bit on instead of 108,
it would have been about 96.
Okay. Oh, right. Okay. So from 96 to 108.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I just think... Sorry. Hold on. When you say you've added just a little bit, you've added nearly half marathon.
No, I love
just a little bit.
That was me. I've added a little bit on. I'm like 50 metres.
Yeah. But that's what I was expecting. I was thinking like...
12 miles, a little bit. I've added a little bit on.
Well, I think it also... It's a better end point
of
to
course.
Be at
yeah, it's
the
nice.
Memorial tree. It's an open space. Yeah, there's parking around there. Do you know, it's going to be a better point to finish for logistical reasons than perhaps in front of my in-law's house on their little street.
Yeah.
You know? Just out of interest, what time are you planning on finishing?
In my head, it's a midday finish.
Okay.
So, for purposes of people being able to...
Yeah, attend. Yeah, yeah.
So you're doing this. This is in 24 hours. This run gets completed.
Yeah. Yeah, 24 hours, yeah.
And how are you looking to structure it?
Leicester to Nottingham is about a marathon, so 25-ish miles. And then it's a double marathon from...
double marathon from
Nottingham down to Birmingham. And then 26-ish miles from there to Coventry. And then, like I mentioned, a little bit added on to get me the extra 8.
So you're going to do, I guess, the Leicester Royal. So the first leg... You're just doing that in one go?
No.
No?
No, no. I need to, obviously, the most difficult thing with endurance running, I mean, I'm not an endurance runner at this point. I mean, when this airs, I technically am. But at the point at which we're speaking now, I've never run more than a marathon. So I think the idea is that you feed and fuel regularly.
Yeah, yeah.
So in my head, it's kind of like every 2 hours, 5-10 minutes, maybe dry socks, dry set of trainers, et cetera, et cetera. Refuel, get some water on, and then go again.
Will you be having like someone following you, like with you? You know, like when you're watching Tour de France and there's a car behind you and they keep chucking you like bottles of water, spare change of clothes,
bananas.
I've got the AI bananas. Drone. Yeah. The AI drone's come in with water.
Oh, yeah.
Over,
we'll get to that incredible piece of kit.
I've got a couple of volunteers who are going to drive ahead and set up kind of aid stations as and when. I've been training consistently since the beginning of the year, and I have a good base from my time in the army. So
I was going to say for anyone who has skipped the first episode, so your background is you've got military background, which means you're hard as nails anyway. Running or is running something that you were always an activity that you always enjoyed, or is it something that you're doing more now because of Aurora and because of the challenge?
So believe it or not, I don't like running. I'm just
right.
It's one of those things where. Because that's quite good at it, you tend to just be okay doing it.
Yeah, yeah,
But I prefer functional fitness. So a mixture of everything, all over body stuff is my preference. In the army, I was good at running, but I never really enjoyed it. I did it because I had to.
Right.
Is that when
they wake you up at 4 a.m. and make you put on a backpack, which is the equivalent of a human in weight?
They do that, mostly in training. I think there's a kind of an idea of the army being like that forever. But really, once you're out of training, it's pretty relaxed.
Really? Is it all a scam?
In the main part, it is. If you're good at your job, physically fit, and they can trust that you're going to turn up to work every day, you're kind of given a little bit of breathing space. Whereas if you're somebody who can't tie your shoelaces without instruction, then they're on you.
Yeah, I mean, joking aside, I guess, you know, once you're, because it's self-discipline as well, isn't it? You know, you're doing there for that reason. Can people still make a donation? Because I know the challenge finished today, the day that this episode's been uploaded, but how can people get involved?
Yeah, of course. So I'm supporting 5 charities with this challenge. Each of the 3 hospitals, so Birmingham Children's Hospital in general, Leicester Royal Infirmary in particular, the NICU, Queen's Medical Centre Nottingham, again in particular the NICU, Lily May Foundation, and a local charity called Halley's Hideaway.
Yeah.
So I've got a Just Giving page, which is going to channel all of the money equally between those charities, which I'm sure if I give you the link, you'll be able to put it in the description.
He's just done my job for me, Click that link in the description.
But yeah, I mean, I was kind of...
Brilliant.
When I come up with a challenge, I was thinking, why the hell are you doing this to yourself?
Yeah.
And a lot of it comes down to that feeling of pushing through the pain.
Yeah.
Because obviously when you do something for long enough, it's going to start to hurt. And at the point at which it hurts, pushing past that barrier, there's almost some form of connection and feeling to Aurora.
Mm.
And for me, that there can't be anything more special than that, right? So...
These guys have said plenty of times on episodes in the past similar words to that, and especially doesn't matter how far into the trenches you go with that, because nothing's ever going to compare to what you have gone through.
Yeah.
And so
I worried at one point when I went for a phase of running for about a week. And
you ran for a whole week. Wow.
I just felt like running.
Oh, Forrest.
But like, no, I went for a phase of running. When myself and Amy signed up for the Birmingham Half Marathon, right the way back in, I think it was 2012 or something like that. And I felt to some extent at times it was almost it was mimicking self-harm to an extent.
Oh, wow.
Because you'd get to a point where it was hurting and you'd think, and I'm one of these people, so if I went out for a run today and let's say I run 5 mile in however long, the next time I go out, I have to beat that time.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is actually the complete and utter wrong way of training. You shouldn't train like that because you're not always going to beat your time.
You're stitching yourself up ultimately, aren't you?
Well, yeah. And and when I would go out and I wouldn't hit that time, I'd mentally beat myself up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So then I'd go out the next time and I'd be running so hard, it was so painful. And that's why I say it's almost mimicking self-harm to an extent, because like I say, you're never going to beat the time all the time.
No, it's impossible.
It's impossible.
I'm exactly the same as that with wanting to PB. If I go out and I lace up and I think, oh, feel a little bit lively, even though my coach has specifically said, Jordan, you're running in a zone 2 today, I think, God, I think I can smash my PB here. And I can't help myself. I mean, with training for Aurora's run, I'm absolutely following what the coach is saying, because, you know, running a 5K as fast as you can is completely different to running 108 miles. And so I have to trust the process and build the engine, which is what zone 2 does. But I'm exactly the same. And it's interesting that you said about this feeling of self-harm, because as I mentioned at the end of last episode, coming out of the funeral and kind of just at the time that the funeral had passed as well, the world was starting to get back to normal post-COVID. And so a lot of normality was coming back to everybody else's world, and obviously their world was carrying on.
People started having colds again instead of COVID, didn't they?
Exactly that. And you didn't have to queue for the supermarket. I was bedbound with grief, really, really bad. Mm. And it's funny, because I wouldn't have thought that that's how I would have reacted in that moment. And it took a lot there for my wife to kind of G me up, to not be that person.
Was she trying to, does she know when to, like, you know, that emotional intelligence, know when to like, okay, he might need a little bit of tough love today or a bit of a leg up, or just leave him the F alone?
She knows me better than I know myself.
Yeah, brilliant.
She really does. And vice versa. And I think one thing that was really good about, or is really good about our relationship, but in particular in that time, is that it was never me and her feeling that lowness at the same time. We were always quite good at flipping who was the person who was really struggling. But yeah, she was really pushing. We were still at her parents' because our house was just about to be ready to move into because it was a new build. And like people would come round and I would just hide, essentially. I wouldn't want to see or speak to anybody. So we kind of excluded ourselves from everything. I didn't go back to work straight away. Because how could you? Like I was really in a really, really difficult spot. And I decided, well, I started helping her old man out who's a general builder doing bits and bobs for him. And I decided that I would do a version of Aurora's Challenge, but back then. And what I did is run 216 miles across the month of March, which was about 8 miles a day.
Yeah.
The relevance of 216 is it's 108 times two.
Yeah.
But the squadron that I served in the army was 216 Parachute Signal Squadron.
Oh, right.
So I kind of tied them both in. But when I was running that, I was doing a 4 days graft in the building trade and then running a half marathon home. Excuse me.
Oh, so you'd do it after, so you wouldn't do it in the morning?
I'd run home. Wow. I'd get home.
That must have took a lot out of you then.
It took a hell of a lot out of me, but I kind of didn't want to speak or see anybody. Mm. And I didn't really know what else to do with my time because I was a new dad with nobody to care for. And so I started doing that challenge and it hurt a lot. I mean, I got blistered. I've got brand new trainers, like an idiot, because I've been running my whole life through the armies and I've got a new pair of trainers, put them on, first run, blisters. So that is day one of 31, however many days are in March. And every time it got to the point where it was really, really hurting, I would feel like a connection to Aurora, like a real connection. And it was actually quite dangerous in that it then put thoughts in my head about being more serious and intentive with hurting myself. Mm. I was seriously considering suicide, I'll be honest. But not in the I don't want to be here part of it, more of I'll do anything to be with her.
Yeah.
I mean, it never got to the point that...
Did you speak to anyone about that? Sorry to put in, because it's such an often overlooked thing 100%. With men, especially of I'm a bit older than you, but our age group, isn't it? And there seems to be still a stigma attached around that it's considered selfish and it's kind of pushed away. And it's like, well, hang on, it's the reason why it's happening, the reason why it is one of the biggest killers of men, between that lot of mid-30s to mid-40s bracket is because it's a thing.
Yeah. And I think there's a new terminology around it, and you never say somebody committed suicide anymore. They passed from suicide or it's
I didn't know that.
Yeah, people are trying to use it as a, it's a disease. These people are suffering. They're not choosing this. This is kind of all-encompassing. And
we read it with Graham last year, the cricketer, wasn't it? Graham Thorpe. Well, I grew up watching him when I was... Because he's been in the news again at the time of recording this because his wife's been speaking out about the lack of support that he got upon... But that's a different conversation. But I think it's such an important thing again and thank you for opening up about it. So did you recognise that yourself? Did you seek...
No, I did recognise it myself. Yeah. I never put plan to action, but it was quite overwhelming and constant in my mind that...
Yeah, brain had gone there.
Yeah. I mean, I would be running and see a bridge and stuff like that. And not that I would ever stop and look over.
Did it scare you?
No, not really. No, because like I say, in my head, I wasn't not wanting to be here.
Yeah.
The thought that was, if it was to happen, I would be back with Aurora where I belonged, being able to look after again. And so it wasn't really a fear because it felt almost like it would have been the right thing to do, which sounds so bizarre now in retrospect. But so, I was suffering quite badly then. And like I say, the more that I run and the harder that it hurt, the more connected to Aurora that I felt. And so that kind of put me into a spiral of maybe if I intensified the pain or maybe if I was to take the ultimate step, then the connection would be a forever, well, we'd be together, essentially.
Yeah.
Wow. Not that I didn't actually seek professional help with it. Kath and I did go for a little bit of therapy quite soon after Aurora passed away, which now in hindsight I believe to be the wrong time to have done it. And it was at Birmingham Children's Hospital, which is where we'd spent, the time before her final days. So I think like geographically, time-wise, and even probably now the therapist herself. She, I mean, she was brilliant and she was doing her job, but it just didn't feel right at that time. I don't really know what got me out of that. I think
Did you feel like he'd just done it too soon? Just to expand on that a little bit
for the therapy. Yeah, it felt
the reason
too
why I'm asking, because I think you were 6 years. There's a difference. That's why I thought it's quite a difference. Yeah. Maybe to bring Matt in, because it was, I don't know, it's a slight tangent, if you don't mind. Because Matt was, and we spoke about this. I remember on an episode last year, because it had been 6 years before you had some counselling or therapy. And then we spoke about, but if you hadn't had it at that point, that was kind of like, which then took you down the route to where, you know, all paths lead to where you are now.
Yeah.
So I just thought it was interesting, the different timescales that you had there.
Yeah, no, well, it only, ultimately saved our marriage, really, like me getting my help and it was something I needed to do. And yeah, it was, I didn't see a bereavement support worker. I saw a counsellor, but she was great. She was great. She did phone call sessions with me and 500 quid I didn't really have, but it's the best 500 quid I spent.
Yeah.
Ever.
I think that's for men especially. It's 5 years now for me, and I guess this, what I'm doing now, the kind of putting my story out there in order to help others is a form of therapy along with the fitness.
Exactly, yeah.
So I guess it's not a dissimilar time to you. I also think women tend to speak more between each other about this kind of thing. And so although they might not necessarily go to therapy, they speak to their mothers, the other girls that are around them that have children or whatever it may be. And obviously this is a really, really common thing, whether it be stillbirth, miscarriage, baby loss. It's something that happens a lot more than people think about. And so for women who are happy to share that, and obviously if we had this, what happened to us was quite public. And as a result, people could then reach out to Kath, who perhaps hadn't told anyone else about the miscarriages, and it would start a conversation. So Kath had the opportunity to speak to a lot of people in depth about how she was feeling. So for us, I guess it reaches a time when you're like, I was worried personally to go on with the therapy thing. I put a post out recently on It's Why I Run. Weirdly, I set the page up to help other men, especially, be more open about how they're feeling. You know, I'm ex-military firefighter, like we said last time.
All-round hard bastard.
All-round double hard West Ham fan.
Are you a hammer?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, you're going down.
Yeah. We might do.
So I'm only saying that because I'm over this side of the desk.
I tell you what, by the time this goes out, we'll know one way or the other.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm
a Leicester fan. You can field day.
We'll come to visit you then. But yeah, so I hope that by being more honest about how I was feeling and sharing my story and stuff like that, it would help other people. And then I actually did the Instagram thing, and I was actually struggling about a month and a half, 2 months ago. Not to the point of crisis, just not my usual self. And I'd been hiding that from my followers. I'm doing the things with your fingers there, as if I'm some kind of celebrity. I'm not, obviously.
Doing
not.
Doing the quotations.
The people that I'm supposed to be helping, I was hiding that from them, and I thought, how can dare I? Because that is exactly what this is not about. And
at least you recognise that in yourself, though. And you, so that proves the purity of why you're doing it, and you're not doing it for any reason that's insincere.
That took a lot to post, because it was like, this is really my business now. People are really going to know my business by putting this out there. And it was quite funny, really, because like I made a point of saying I wasn't at crisis, but people only see the two levels of whether you're great or you're at crisis.
It's the iceberg theory, isn't it?
Exactly. And so the people that follow me, my closer friends, are all then messaging me as if I'm about to top myself. And it's kind of like, guys, this should be something that you're doing periodically, really, especially with the approach of Aurora's birthday. You know it's coming. Why does it take me to go to social media to say, you know, guys, I'm struggling, I'm thinking about going to therapy. I just wanted to be honest with you all, because if you see me running all the time and, look at me, I'm doing this high rocks and I'm running and I'm feeling great. Yeah. And, you know, what about this motivational quote?
Yeah.
That is actually more damaging than me saying, look, actually, guys, this is a down moment in my life and I'm looking at seeking appropriate help. And the reason that I did that is because, you know, I've been blessed with two more children, and I don't want whatever is affecting and hurting me to then go on to them. And so, I haven't actually gone to therapy yet since that post, but it's something that I'm kind of working my way towards, because obviously with life, you've got so many outside environmentals, the lack of sleep, you know, stress at work, the time of year, finances, you know, your training, any other commitments, but seeing your friends, seeing your family, all those kind of things. And it's like, is this just a hard time of my life because of all of these things aligning, or am I actually in need of the therapy?
Yeah, but
I would caveat that with is there's no harm in trying.
Absolutely.
You know, and if it is environmental, at least you've had a chance to go and offload and maybe have a little bit of a cry.
And as they say, there's there's never a right time, is there? There will never be, what's the phrase? That life is what happens when you're making plans, isn't it? Or is that,
you know, I thought it was life is like a box of chocolate. Yeah.
Or that. Did you watch Forrest Gump last night? Two now.
I'm just linking it with running.
Do you know what? I've still never seen that film.
Oh, there's something wrong with you.
I know all the clips, but I've never put them in order.
See, now, as soon as you were talking about that with the therapy and the what people are seeing through social, what people are seeing through you on an everyday, I remember seeing an image years ago. It was when I was teaching, so it was after we'd lost Lily, and it's an image of an apple in a mirror, right? And I'm going to for the purpose of obviously our listeners, it's an apple in a mirror, and I'm just going to talk people through it. So the apple, is facing the mirror. And the apple looks absolutely perfect. But behind the apple, so on the side that isn't facing the mirror, there's like half the apple has been sort of eaten and it's been chunked away and stuff. It just popped into my head straight away when you were talking about that, what people see to what people don't understand. Yeah.
It's the mask as well. It's the mask, absolutely. Isn't it? It's the you know, you put this face on, this mask on, and like, because we've talked about this before on the pod about, you know, like, you have to, it sounds really crap to say, but life continues. Yeah. So you know that you can't, if you're struggling, but you can't show that all the time because it's impossible to show it.
Of course.
You should be able to, and it's good to be able to do it, but the mask is there to get you through moments that, you know, that you're facing, but you can't outwardly show.
And that was one of the things that actually worried me about putting that post out, that was quite raw and vulnerable and put me in a spot, is because there are some of my colleagues, friends, people that I work with on there, and kind of that is really the like business and pleasure and personal and professional and, but you know, like you've shared when you're happy.
Yeah.
So why can't you share when you're not?
And what I was just about to say is, if you think about a time where you've belly laughed, like somebody's told you a joke and it's really got you and it's tickled you, and then, I don't know, a week down the line you think of it and it makes you laugh again and stuff. When you think of that time where you've belly laughed, you're not belly laughing 24/7, 7 days a week for months.
Yeah.
It'll last for a set period of time. And that's exactly the same when you have these really shit periods and these really shit times, is that, yes, it's really bad at that time, but it isn't going to last and last and last and last.
Yeah.
And the caveat around it is that you seek the support as and when you need it.
Yeah.
There's no rule book. There's no linear line that says you must feel like this now, and in 6 months' time, you must feel like this now, and in 12 months, you must feel like this, because it lots of models, and if you read it from a book, that's what it suggests, is that grief is linear and you follow through all of these different processes.
I always remember you pushing back against that thought process as well.
And it's not true.
Yeah,
it isn't true. It's like riding a roller coaster. Mm. Some days you can be on top of the world and then you have the guilt feeling. Oh, shit, should I be feeling happy? Should I be laughing? Mm. Should I be, you know, enjoying what I'm doing at this moment? And then the day after, you might feel as shit as you felt before.
Yeah. That's a good analogy with the belly laughing, actually, because it's a feeling in a moment that can travel in time, but lessen, and then you it hits you a couple of weeks later.
Yeah.
It's funny you say about that kind of guilt thing, because following on from carrying on from the Aurora's Run, which I was mentioning earlier, the first version of it, the first iteration, the easier one, we then kind of, like, Kath and I had then arrived in our finally built new house, which was obviously months and months overdue and behind time. So obviously we've moved in there and we're kind of sat on our sofa in this three bed house in this nice little village. And we're like, we're mum and dad with literally nothing to do. Like, who are we now? All of our friends had children. All of our, you know, all of our family have children. How do we Because when you've not lost a child and you're knocking about your mates with their kids, you're like, oh yeah, this will be us one day. But when you've lost a child and your kids haven't, your friends haven't, and their life is carrying on as normal, and you know, there's all of these events, that birthdays and this
daily
and that.
Daily reminders.
And it's like, well, how the hell do I kind of put myself out there in this? So we kind of reclused ourselves a little bit from society and kind of became just a double act, really. And this is quite a nice story. And I know we've mentioned about kind of the signs that you have when you've lost somebody and you need that kind of warmth. So I was kind of undecided what to do in the short term after Aurora passed away. I felt a little bit as though I wanted to run away because I didn't want people to see me as the guy who had lost his daughter and you know, pity me almost. So I left the job that I was in there. I'll carry on with that in a minute. But I left the job that I was in at the time, and they were great. I must mention that they did give me a couple of months of support financially before I left, and they understood my reasoning.
That's nice, because we've had stories of completely the opposite from guests.
No, they were great. They really were great. We were kind of sat there, and I was thinking, do we travel? Do we become, you know, a little bit nomadic and just go and get away for a bit and kind of figure it all out? Or do we stay? And Kath was desperate for a dog, just as something to care for and love. She wanted to nurture for something. And I was like, and she wanted a Dasher.
You like that? Because it's like, oh, I guess we'll end up walking it.
Well, yeah, we have that every day now.
What did she want?
A Dachshund.
Oh, mate, don't.
Have you got one?
Fucking hell. Yeah, Ryan knows. Fucking
you're damn
Dachshund.
Right. Your dog was nearly... like brutally murdered at my house when we had it.
So she's getting a lot, but she's getting up. She's older now, but like, mate, aren't they stupid dogs? I mean, they suit they suit the owner. I mean, they suit me. I don't know about you. I'm not having a go at you, but they suit me down to the ground. She is so stupid.
Oh, really?
And they bark. Does she bark? Does yours bark?
Oh, I haven't got a Dachshund.
Oh, don't go for it.
I put my foot down.
Brilliant. Well done. Good man.
So she wanted a Dachshund.
You go. So don't go there.
Yeah.
I'm glad that we had this conversation. Yeah. I'm glad that you didn't go there.
No, we didn't go there. So I was like, well, if I'm having a dog, like, I need to be able to walk it or run with it in the long term.
Yeah.
And obviously they have back problems and you have to and all that kind of stuff. So we met in the middle with a very council estate, no offense to people on council estate, dog. a French bulldog.
Okay.
Obviously. And he is brilliant. But so we've gone and picked him up. Let me just say, I am from a council estate. Yeah. So I grew up in a council estate, so I feel like it's okay to say that. But you know, the standard, we got a French bulldog, and his name's Abel. And he really was great for us in giving us a reason to get out the house. Get up in the morning.
It's unconditional love, isn't it? As well?
So we took him to the vets for the first time, let's say after having him for 7 weeks. And it turns out he was born on the day that Aurora had passed away.
No.
Yeah. Ah, yeah, seriously.
Man,
I knew this because we'd spoken.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And for me,
that
was probably the first time that I was like, this has happened for a reason. Like, I believe now in the feathers, the butterflies and the magpies. Yeah, yeah. Like, I believe now.
Just when I question the world, things like that happen. Because I'm, you know, Matt's religious, Ryan's not, I'm ambivalent. But then there's something.
Yeah,
because there's stuff like that.
I don't think, though, things like that link into religion.
No, spirituality and the way the world works.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think I said to you, Jordan, actually, when we were having a chat after the last podcast, is that I got into the car when we were doing, for the podcast awards. Do you remember? And I sent the picture of the feather.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And there was things like that, which were just like...
You need to explain that now.
Yeah, so... Thanks, Dan. Thanks for that. So basically, when we were going to the podcast awards, on the morning of the podcast awards, when I opened my car, there was a feather on the in the driver's footwell. And I remember messaging you saying, this has got to be a sign. It's got to be, because it's too crazy for it to be coincidence. Yeah. It's just... Yeah.
Well, when else have you got in and there been a feather there?
Exactly. And there are other things. I remember... when we first lost Lily, and on my way home from work, I used to drive via the cemetery. And when Lily was born, the song that was on the radio was Fireflies by Owl City.
Yeah.
Now, I used to question, there's something not right here. I mean, the chances are, because it was number one at the time, it was going to be played an awful lot on the radio. Whenever I used to get in the car from being at the cemetery, Fireflies would be on the radio, yeah. And it was almost like, this is just mad. It's mad.
Yeah.
And do I believe it? Honestly, I don't know. But at the same time, I do question that it's too crazy for it to be coincidence.
Yeah, 100%.
Something about the energy in the world, isn't it? That brings that.
And I guess if you believe in manifestation, which I'm not, I'm not massive on, but there has to be an element of it. If you're looking, or so for, when I'm running, for example, sometimes I'll look for something to, or when we go down to a memorial tree, you know, literally the other year there was a robin.
Yeah,
literally on its own in this little wooded area.
That's symbolic, isn't it?
Like, so I've got one on
right.
My net.
And
it was just there, and it stayed around while we were having tea and cake for ages, and those kind of things.
Yeah,
maybe on a normal day, or if I hadn't lost Aurora, I wouldn't even notice that the robin
it
was there.
It would have been there, but true.
So I think there's
true.
I think it's a comfort thing as well.
100%, 100%. I mean, I always say that I could never expect somebody who hasn't been through this to know what to say or how to approach me when I don't even know what to say to my wife who went through it next to me. Mm. So I think the excuse of I don't know what to say is like, I don't believe that that's valid, because I've got a friend, right? It's actually quite funny. I've got this friend, I've known him since I joined the army. So I've known him for 17 years. He is, by his own admittance, a strange guy. He's a brilliant guy, but he's strange, and he knows it.
In what way?
Can we name this guy? Should we just give him a fictional name? Yeah. Rodney. Well,
do you want me to give you? I'll tell you what. He's got a name he calls himself. He calls himself Handsome Rob. So take from that what you will. And I'm sure you won't mind me sharing this, because I'm actually bigging him up. So he is socially awkward. He is very awkward.
Right.
But he will always send something when he knows that I need it. So if it's Aurora's birthday or whatever, it might even just be a handshake emoji. But he's just saying, look, I've seen it.
Showing you his
and I'm thinking of you. And I know that he can't give me any more than that. But I know that he respects me and thinks enough of me that he's saying, look, I am actually here.
And that means something, doesn't it?
And that means something. Yeah. And obviously we looked at that. You just mentioned that video that's gone out of the podcast the other day. So he's just messaged me saying, I can't wait to watch this and ruin my Sunday. And it's like, you know, but do you know what I mean?
I love that he's
thinking of me, and he's saying, I've just seen that. You're a good bloke.
Yeah.
I'm going to watch it on Sunday. That's what I read. And even though he sent it in a completely different way as a tongue-in-cheek thing, I know what he means.
Yeah.
And that's enough from him.
Yeah.
Because that's what he's, don't want to say capable of, because that's quite undermining.
And it's that realness as well, the sincerity. It's not real. Because what he said to you is not platitudes.
No.
Is it?
No.
It's not sugarcoating the...
No.
It's real life. Right?
Yeah. So to go back to what you're saying, were we difficult to approach? Probably. Is that an excuse to not try? Definitely not. I mean, you are so isolated when that happens, by your own choice in some parts, but then, you know, people actually avoid you. Like I would go to a supermarket and perhaps see a friend's mum, and I'm usually like is your sister all right? Like, you know, I'm that guy who goes around to your house and makes a joke with your mum about how gorgeous she is. So like, I'll always chat to mums and dads and stuff like that. And, you know, I'd go to a supermarket and I would see them, and then they would do everything they can to not be in an aisle that I am. And I'm thinking, are we not isolated enough that this is happening to us now? Like, we're very alone in this. We feel ostracized. Like, how are we supposed to cope when people are making it that much worse?
It's a great
point. For me, I mean, my friends, when we spoke to the therapist, she had said, the hardest thing about grief is that you are in control about how everybody else acts. And she said, you will lose a lot of friends, not lose them from your life, but, you know, you might have had friends that you were best friends with, but now they become the friends that you go out with. You might also have friends that you used to go out with, but now they've had children and you're aligned and now you do family stuff with. And she said to us, you'll lose some friends and you'll gain some friends. Some people will step up that you perhaps thought might not have, and some people that you thought might have stepped up.
It's a regular theme, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that has most definitely happened, but you've obviously got the stuff like your judging people's parenting almost, because you're like, you have got what I want, what I deserve. You cheated on your wife, or you know, like that, you know, yeah. I know that you ain't in love, or I know that you didn't want that child, or whatever it may be, and it's kind of hard to manage. Like, you know, I had a little bit of a fallout with my sister because my sister has three kids to three different blokes, and you know, she had a bit of a past and stuff like that, and there was a little bit of like, I'm angry at you, but then it got to the point where it was like, you can't be angry at the world all the time. It takes too much energy. And Kath and I had sat down and we just said, out of respect for Aurora's fight to live, we have to live our lives in some respect. We have to get back out there. We have to figure out what it is that we want to do. We've got to figure out what our plan is now moving forward as parents and, you know, make the most out of life because we're still blessed to have ours. And we were chatting the other day about the change in occupation, and I did exactly the same.
Yes, yeah.
I was sat there and I was like, I need to make a difference now. I need to help people and I need to make my daughter proud in everything that I do. And so I applied to be a firefighter. I'm really proud, to be fair, because I came top of the recruitment process for Warwickshire. So I came number one. And then I got loaded onto the firefighter course. And this was, so the firefighter course started in the September. She passed away in the January, started in the September. It continued through what would have been her first birthday. So I was literally running into training, burning buildings in training on the day of her birthday. It was a very, very...
That was surreal.
Surreal, strange time. It was just blind focus on something. That's what I needed physically, mentally, blind focus.
Being in a burning building probably do that. Wouldn't
it? Yeah, I mean, it's hot. it was exactly what I needed at that moment.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, yeah, I came top of the recruitment process and I was awarded a silver axe, which I'm really proud of.
A silver what?
Silver axe.
Oh, right.
Like a firefighter's axe.
Yeah.
So when you become the top recruit, they give you an award of an
that's
axe.
Brilliant.
Yeah, so I've got an axe. It's in the loft. Kath won't let me.
We've got an axe in the loft.
In the loft, yeah. It's like mounted onto a.
Could you use it? Is it like a.
At least you get out the roof if you need to.
Yeah. Like,
is it like a workable axe?
I imagine it could be. Yeah. It's wooded handle and then a silver axe plate. It's quite nice.
I'd definitely chop up my steak with that. Yeah. Just like.
She won't let me be in the loft. So I'm like, you know, I've got all my old army memorabilia and photos and medals and stuff like that.
Then an axe.
Can we put it up in the front room? She's like, no, absolutely not. It's not beige. The dog's beige, the carpet's beige. So we live in a beige house. So that was a massive achievement for me, in really difficult times. So yeah, I became a firefighter. And unfortunately, I mean, I did it for a couple of years, but it wasn't what I thought and hoped it would be. And I was warned of that, to be fair, when I was in a recruitment.
In what way?
The world is really safe, which is great. But it's not great when you've joined the fire service to save lives.
So it wasn't like the movie Backdraft?
It wasn't like the movie Backdraft, unfortunately. Do you want a funny thing that really told me, like, I'm probably going to have to leave this job? So the money isn't great. They should be paid a lot more.
Really?
Yeah. It's gone up
a
little bit.
Why is this always the way with, like, really essential services? Nurses, like, firefighters.
Yeah. I mean, so Kath had fallen pregnant again, following Aurora passing with our second little girl. And so she was, and to be fair, her work, I should say, was really great. They honoured Kath's maternity after Aurora passed away. So she got the whole maternity for that, which was really noble of them. Yeah. They're a great company. So we were on one wage, really. Yeah. And it wasn't enough to run the household. So that was one reason. The second reason was that, you know, I joined to be high octane, life-saving, jumping out of trucks and cutting people out of cars.
When the reality was quite the opposite.
Yeah, quite the opposite. Burnt toast, et cetera, et cetera. So we got this one call once. And
cat out of a tree, all that kind of stuff.
Well, let's listen to this story. So it was approaching the time that Kath was like, this is affecting our ability to live, really, financially. Plus, once Aeris was born, I was doing night shifts and she was quite a difficult baby and with sleep and stuff, so I was getting to sleep at the station. She was not getting to sleep at home, and you can imagine how that felt coming through the door in the morning. Yeah. But anyway, we just greased
with the axe.
We were in the truck one day, and the alarm's gone off. You come down the pole, you've jumped in the wagon, you've got all your kit on, and it comes through the radio. We've got a parrot up a tree,
and parrot
up a tree, and the crew commander was like,
sorry.
Yeah, that's where they live. And she was like,
yeah, I was going to say.
She was like, no, this one's a domesticated one. No, it's a pet. You're going to have to go.
If,
Oh, nah. Go on, Matt. Sorry, what are you thinking?
No.
I just heard Matt's brain explode.
It's got wings. It flies
well,
there.
Yeah, well, that's what we were all thinking. And yeah, then obviously the lights went, woo, flying down the A444 in the knee.
The parents start copying it.
Well, yeah. So we pull up to it. My crew commander's fuming.
How many of you went to this?
The whole squadron.
Four of us.
Four of you and a
fire appliance. So we're squealing down towards where it goes. Obviously.
Did you have the sirens on for a parrot?
Yeah, we're going out of traffic, going about 90 miles an hour down the A444.
I'm never going to look at fire engines the same again, never. Yeah. Like, are they off to save a parrot?
So we turn up, and obviously the noise of the fire engine, the parrot flew off.
Yes!
I love it. And I got home and I said,
parrot's flying away going, gotcha.
Yeah. Back home.
Pretty Polly. As if a parrot could go out and go,
So I got home that day and Cass was like, busy shift. And I was like, you wouldn't believe. And she is like, yeah, it's probably run its course. Run its course, get a real job. And so, it did what I needed it to do in the immediate aftermath of a royal party.
That's amazing.
And
I think it was worth it just for that story.
Yeah, honestly, that's a fantastic story, isn't it?
That is.
Four of you took a fire engine to a tree to save a parrot that then flew off because of the siren.
We're trying to get Freddie to be a fireman. I'm thinking not now.
You know what it is? I must say, obviously, you know, I've been a soldier and I've been to Afghanistan, I've been to Iraq. My excitement levels are completely different to the average Joe. And so when we're getting called out to a bin fire in a park, the other guys and girls on the truck are like, you know, I'm going to get seen in my uniform and, you know, bam, bam, I'm going to get it with a fire hose and stuff like that. And it's quite exciting. And there is a fire. You know, there is an element of excitement. But
whereas you've experienced.
I was going to say, a bit of a difference between defusing a bomb in Basra or like going for a parrot in Coventry.
Caveat so that I don't get pulled up on any like military meme pages. I'm not a bomb disposal expert.
I'd love to have just been in the fire engine on the way back to the station as well. Like, just all of you looking at each other like, as if you're disappointed in each other.
We went to KFC, I think.
There's got to be some parrot jokes that had come out as well, like, between the teams. Wild. Literally, that must have been the most silent journey home. It was like, no. It's true, isn't it? Like,
Did you go down the pole for it as well?
I think we were watching a country and western up in the crew room, down the pole. But the crew commander that I had,
amazing.
He's a great bloke, but he's old school firefighter. And he was fuming.
I can imagine.
He said, yeah, that's where they live. And she was like, yeah, I love it's a pet. Yeah. And we still went.
That's where they live.
And obviously it cost something like five to eight grand just for the appliance to pull off.
Oh, yeah. I thought you were going to say to the parrot.
Pull out of the station, do you know what I mean? It's obviously our wages plus the everything that happened in the background, plus the fuel. From that
point of view, it's like it's a complete waste of time.
But that's a different podcast.
That's
still Parrot Podcast.
Can I ask you a question around your running?
Yeah.
Is it like for you, is it the escape?
Yeah.
Is it like there's a focus there, of course. Mm-hmm. Goes back to what Ryan said about the kind of self-harm point loosely, right? Yeah. But you said like obviously you don't necessarily enjoy running all the time. Mm-hmm. I'm a bit weird because I do like running all the time.
You're not running fast enough then.
Probably not, mate. Probably not.
You know what his challenge is, don't you? That Matt's
But what I'm getting around to is that do you feel like that's your time with Aurora as well? I know it's at, like
so for me point. It kind of started the first when we were approaching the first anniversary of her passing. I was I've never been overweight, but I was out of shape.
Yeah.
I was eating bad. I've never been a drinker. I was probably drinking at every other weekend. I've never been a drinker really, but I was eating bad and I wasn't putting any effort into myself. Now, there's a reason for that. And the reason is I had another daughter and I was riddled with the guilt of what if I choose to go into the gym and she dies and then I could have had that hour with her. Mm. So there was a lot of guilt around like raising another child and losing moments with her. Obviously, you kind of catastrophized everything for at least a while after. So I was really neglecting myself in order to be the present father, husband, support my wife, and be there for every moment. But every January, because my second daughter, Eris, her name is actually
I love the names.
So her name is Aeris, A-I-R-I-S, and that comes from the rainbow god,
yeah,
goddess.
Yeah.
And obviously when you lose a baby, the following baby is called the rainbow baby, yeah. So we called her Aeris. Aeris Aurora Black, ever a sister's middle name. So she's born on the 1st of January. Aurora passed away on the 31st of January. But every time January approached, and especially for the first one, I decided to start running because I know that I feel better and I would eat better. And I kind of went through a phase for the first three years of approaching the anniversary that I would just get back into running for my headspace for that moment, knowing that if I was a little bit fit, a little bit healthier, at least for that month, that I would be in a better place mentally to tackle the anniversary, because the anniversary for me is always a lot harder than the birthdays. So I'd done that 3 years on the bounce, and then I would neglect myself, get into a little bit of decent shape for a holiday or whatever, and then go back into it. And this year, so at the start of this year, I started with the same thing. I got into running. I ran for the month. And then obviously Aurora's anniversary had passed. And I was like, right, George, like, you are the best version of yourself right now when you are fit and healthy and you are giving yourself a little bit of time to think, to connect with Aurora, to think. Obviously, I'll be honest, I cry quite a lot on runs. Sometimes just out of nowhere, sometimes because I'm thinking about a particular moment, or I'm thinking about what would she look like now, or like I quite often get quite upset about everything she didn't get to experience, walking through the summer grass and feeling the breeze and the sun on her skin and that kind of stuff. And when you're out running and the weather's good, those are the kind of things that go through my head. But this year I was like, right, George, like you've got kids that need you and a wife that need you. You cannot be the man and the dad and the husband that you need to be unless you put some emphasis on looking after yourself. And so I got with a guy we know called Josh. In fact, I carried it on a little bit because we had a holiday in Dubai.
That's your trainer, isn't it, Josh?
In the March, So Josh, he was my trainer. I've gone into a slightly different training team that cover like nutrition, physiotherapy and stuff just for the run. Yeah. But I went with Josh and he said, what are you training for? And I just said, I just feel as though I want to be ready for anything. And so he kind of gave me that that consistency and that kind of motivation and that, what's that word called?
Momentum?
No, it begins with A.
Arsehole?
He gives me the...
I know exactly what word.
In what context?
So they make you... you're kind of reporting into somebody.
Oh God.
Accountability.
Accountability. I was just about to say
Jesus
that.
Christ, it's not even a hard word. can you edit that 15 minutes that it took to get to that word?
I'm keeping that in because it shows us all up.
Yeah. So I needed that accountability just to make sure that I was going and going and going. Mm. And the more that I did it and the more that I was running, the more I was like, this makes you feel better.
Yeah.
You know that it never feels great getting up and getting laced up and going out in the cold or whatever, you're tired. But you know that when you're on the run and the sense of achievement that follows, I feel like a massive amount of like gratitude and an achievement, even from the kind of the most basic of runs. And I was like, wow, like, I mean, not that it's like reinvented the wheel, but I'm onto something for me personally here. This feels a little bit like therapy, because a lot of the time I will run silent or with a podcast of some description, and I'm just kind of alone with my thoughts. You know, there's nobody's ringing me. no one's ringing me. To be fair, my wife she does ring me and say you need to get back quicker, and that's why I've got good at running. I'm out there and it's just me.
Sometimes it's nice, isn't it, to turn the headphones off and just enjoy the sound of the world and that environment that you're in.
This is hard.
What I will say, because I've been wanting to mention this since you brought it up, because so having a cry while you're running, and that must be. Because I was trying to imagine that, because it's that combination of, look, when you do an exercise, it's good for you. Your brain is releasing those endorphins. And like I say, when I go, you know when you don't want to do exercise or go to the gym, but you go there, and it doesn't mean you'll feel 100% afterwards, but you will 100% be better than you were before you went in, emotionally. So having that contrast, that juxtaposition, I guess, of the endorphins from feeling good and then the release from the emotional state brought on by crying.
Yeah.
Together.
But And Jordan, on your Instagram, you've got a post. Sorry, I sound like a right stalker, but like it makes sense to obviously have your Instagram up while we're here. And it says running doesn't fix grief, but it gives it somewhere to go.
Yeah. Oh, brilliant.
I think like there's a sense of escapism a bit as well. And I mean, I don't want to, you know, my son's only 6 months old, so it's not going to be damaging like toxic masculinity or something like that. But it's very hard to be emotional and then still be a good parent at the same time. I feel like there needs to be kind of a little bit of space between the two, because grieving for me takes a hell of a lot out of me. It makes me tired beyond belief,
yeah,
and just drained. Yeah. And if I was to do that in front, not that I'm scared to cry in front of me. In fact, my daughter actually said to me, she picked this up at nursery. I picked her up the other day and she said, "Dad, I appreciate you." And it was on Aurora's birthday, and I burst out in tears, and I was like, "Do you really? Do you?" she's nearly four. I'm like, "Do you really mean that?" Yeah. I've lost myself a little bit now.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. So I'm not scared to cry in front of them. Mm. I can't be capable of doing the things that they need of me,
yeah,
if I'm allowed myself to kind of just fall apart in front of them. So when I escape on my runs, if I cry, it's done. Mm. I get home, I feel better because I've run, I feel better because I've cried,
yeah,
I feel,
yeah,
more connected to Aurora, I feel a sense of purpose, and then I feel ready to re-attack being Jordan, dad, mm, or husband all over again.
Way of looking at it.
I started to feel that this was happening, and I thought, and people would see me, I was just posting then on Instagram, on my personal Instagram, of like, I'm out running, you know, this and that, and people were like, "God, like, you're inspiring that you're getting up and you're doing this and you're doing this." And I thought, do people really think that of me? You know, people always message me and say like, "You're so strong," and like, yeah, "I can't believe that you can."
I think you're very easy to like and look, because there is no, obviously you're confident, but there's that, not, it's genuine. There's not ego to you.
No.
And you're someone that I want to, unfortunately, we have to bring the episode to a close in a few minutes, which is annoying because we literally could sit and listen to you all day. But I really do believe that. And that's, so, I mean, and again, I go back to something we mentioned earlier, but the fact that you're even wary of it, that presence of mind, it says a lot, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
I think a lot of people in the past have thought that I was going to be an arsehole when they hadn't met me. And then when they met me, changed their mind.
Mm.
Yeah, except for my wife. No, I'm joking. So obviously I started doing the running thing on my normal Instagram, and people would be messaging me, blah, blah, blah. Mm. And then I'm friends with a guy from Coventry called Jamie, who sadly lost his little girl, Hallie, a couple of years ago. And we kind of bonded a little bit over it. And I kind of tried to steer him into running a little bit too. And when he did, he did feel better. And I thought, if I just put a bit more effort into not pushing it on people, but, and not educating, because, you know, I'm not a personal trainer or anything like that, but raising awareness of what's helping me.
Making it be visible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then maybe that will help somebody. And it took a lot for me to actually pull the trigger on the page. In fact, it was a sign. I was up in the middle of the night with Ace, because he doesn't ever sleep. And I was rewatching Prison Break. And I was...
Which series?
One.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah, so I was...
Rewatching
Prison Break series one for some unknown reason. I watched it in Afghan for the first time round on a dodgy DVD that we bought off the Afghanis. But I was watching it, and I was texting a friend, and I was talking about It's Why I Run. And at that moment, I was like, I just don't know. Aurora County, which is a place on
Prison
Break. Literally the second I was about to mention it. And
again.
That is the reason to pull the trigger on this. And so I did. I'm glad that you've picked it up. Look, there is no arrogance about me. I do not want to be like front and center. It wasn't the plan with this page. And I was worried that people would be thinking that, but it turns out that's not necessarily what they think.
No, and even if it was, bollocks to them.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
literally. Yeah. They don't have to be there.
So I set up the page in the hope of helping and reaching other men that were going through hard times, and inspiring them to get into fitness as a form of therapy, because it was helping me. And then just be a little bit more honest with themselves. But then on top of that, it was like, I'm a man who's lost his kid. I have friends who didn't know how to help me. If I'm the man who lost his kid and I talk about how it feels to lose your kid, other men who have lost their kids will feel a connection and know that they're not alone in the feelings that they have if they're not comfortable sharing it with their partner. the anger, the guilt, the hate, all of those kind of things, the why me, but also give some guidance to the people that are around those people to say, don't say they're in a better place, because there's no better place for a child than in their parents' arms, et cetera, et cetera. And just then around the, what we mentioned earlier about the guilt of parenting another child, or, you know, you are invited out, but you're worried that if somebody sees you smile, that they think that you're not sad, and so on and so forth. And then obviously, as my journey with grief evolves, so will the challenges that I face. I always worry about forgetting the touch, the smell, the feel of Aurora, the sounds of Aurora. Obviously, I've got videos, but I, you know, those are worries that probably I will face again in a few years' time. And if the page is still running, which I hope it will be, you know, I can then talk about that and people that are behind me in the journey, sadly, because I wish that there was nobody behind me and no one went through it. They can look at it and maybe see it as a bit of a reference manual and say, not that all of it's the same, but just to say, look, this is normal. This does hurt, and this is how it may feel for you down the line, and this is how I've dealt with it. And obviously things like this now, you know, connecting with you guys, I'm sure there's going to be opportunities to do things together in the future and raise awareness. And,
well, what you've said is, I mean, it's pretty much exactly the same reason why this podcast came to be in existence, and it was having these conversations that we were having anyway, and just putting them on the internet, and that it might not be the same and it won't be the same, but everyone is bonded by grief, and grief does not discriminate, and at whatever stage it is. And I've learned discussing this with people such as yourselves and becoming immersed in the world and becoming, you know, very close friends with these two guys, as much as I think they're a pair of knobs. So it's, you know, just to have all of those resources there, and every, I just think you've been absolutely wonderful, and I'm sure we'll have you back on again at some point. So on the day that this podcast, if you are listening to this on release day, which is the 31st of January, 2026, then today is the day that the challenge has just finished. And the details, as we mentioned earlier, are in the description. If you'd still like to get involved, or give Jordan a follow, get in touch with him, or offer a donation on the Just Giving page too. Before we do wrap up, is there anything that you want to mention that we haven't covered yet, or anything that, gents, Ryan and Matt, that you wish to bring up?
I would just say, for anybody that is new to this club, this journey of baby loss, that it doesn't necessarily get better. But one thing I always say is that I've learned more from loving and losing Aurora than I could have if she was still here. And I take a lot from that, because if you want it to and you're able to, it can make you a better human in general, a better father, husband, because there's so many lessons that you learn about life losing somebody so close to you so young, but especially your child. That if you are able to harness that and mold your new the new person that you've become around those lessons, you will live a better life. It will always be sad, and the times in which the milestones come up are always going to be hard and sad in different ways and different intensities as time passes. But if you are able to use and harness the pain and turn the grief into good, then you will live a far better, more fulfilled life, and the people around you will benefit from that. So that would be my parting.
Beautiful. Absolutely brilliant.
I've got nothing to follow that. Sorry.
Neither have I. Jordan, unreal.
Yeah.
Genuinely unbelievable.
Jordan Black on the Still Parents podcast. All the details, you can get in touch with Jordan in the description for this, and everything else with our website, our socials, and our app, which you can download. We are supported by Globals. Make some noise, and we will be back with our next episode very, very soon. Jordan, thank you.
Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you, Jordan. And wonderful.
Ryan and Matt, take it easy.
Thanking you.
See you later.
The Still Parents podcast is proudly supported by Globals. Make some noise. Click details in the description to find out more.